Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, and thanks for joining us. Today, it's my privilege to continue our interview with Rick Sharga, the Vice President of RealtyTrack. Once again, RealtyTrack is the largest provider of foreclosure data in the entire country. Last time, we talked a lot about the industry and the subprime mortgages and how many of those might be going into foreclosure and sort of the change in the industry. This time we're going to concentrate on RealtyTrack as a company and some of the services that they provide. Rick, RealtyTrack's only been around for 10 years, but it's already become the leading source of foreclosure data in the country. What are a few of the key factors that led to that incredible growth?
Well, probably the beginning of the growth was when our current CEO, Jim Secascio, took over the company in 2001 and turned the business model inside out. The company had originally been founded as a service for realtors, providing them with lists of REO properties for them to go get listings from. And Jim had the insight to believe there was a heavy demand for this kind of information in the consumer market. And recognizing that, and then really spending about 5 years and a fair amount of money to put together a national database that pulls data every day from 2,500 counties around the country so that customers would have that sort of comprehensive, thorough repository of data to pull from. Those were a couple of the keys.
It's interesting that your business exploded while probably foreclosures declined during that whole cycle after Jim came aboard.
It is, and that, you know, we were actually named the 53rd fastest growing private company in the country last year by Inc. magazine in their Inc. 500.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all during a period of one of the longest sustained boom periods in real estate. And we accounted for that basically because a lot of people got priced out of the market that they wanted to be in because the prices were accelerating so rapidly, so they were looking for bargains. And the interest in real estate as an investment alternative really became a much, much higher percentage of the overall investing market, particularly after the dot-com meltdown of the early 2000s. So we attracted an awful lot of people that were looking to invest as the market was taking off.
Now that that's kind of changed, you'd think that your numbers probably would decline. So how is that working out, say, for 2006 over 2005?
Well, we had some nervous moments as we saw the market starting to change, and we believed we'd do okay, but you know, you can never be sure until you go through it. And in fact, while the market went down considerably last year, our business grew by another 37%. So what we're seeing, we believe, are the people that truly are active buyers, the people that are really interested in taking a look at these kind of properties as an important part of their investment practice. And we think those are the kind of people that we're probably seeing in this current market cycle.
So you kind of think that you've attracted the investor as opposed to the speculator then?
I believe so. And while there's probably a little bit less of what the realtors affectionately refer to as looky-loos going mm-hmm. through the site,
sure.
I think we're seeing more people that have a serious interest in doing this on an ongoing basis.
When people think of RealtyTrack, what are you hoping pops into their mind?
Well, the first thing we want them to think about, obviously, is that we're the most reputable supplier of foreclosure data. And that's one of the reasons we started issuing a monthly U.S. foreclosure report, was just to associate the fact that RealtyTrack is reliable enough to provide this data to both the mainstream press and also organizations that have access to any data they want. We're being used currently by the FDIC, who's doing market analyses for their banks. We're being used by the FBI for fraud detection. And we're working with the Federal Reserve out of Kansas right now, who's looking at foreclosure trend analysis. So it's been very gratifying for us that the efforts we put into making sure our data is complete and as accurate as possible have been validated by organizations like that.
Yeah, you've just covered a whole lot of areas. So the FBI are using some of your data. I've read a report where they did a little bit of research on what we had talked about last time, liar's loans, and they had a little section of subprime stated income loans, and it turned out that 90% of the people had exaggerated their income, but 60% of them had exaggerated it by 50% or more. That's pretty scary.
It is scary, but it reminds you of dating in high school, doesn't it?
I didn't do much of that. I married my first girlfriend. Does being an industry leader mean that you attract a higher level of person as company employees? In other words, are there benefits of just having this name that go beyond what we might think is occurring?
You know, my whole career has been about creating brands and managing brands for mostly technology companies, but pretty high-profile companies. And I brought that practice into RealtyTrack. Jim hired me specifically to do that, and so my role has been to develop the brand. I can tell you anecdotally, we had a cover story on U.S. News and World Report on the real estate market. We were covered pretty extensively in there. And two of the companies we use for recruiting actually sent copies of the article to us and said they'd been getting calls from people who wanted to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, a company our size, we have about 140 employees right now. A company our size typically has trouble attracting top flight talent. And, you know, there are certain areas of the company that are still harder than others to attract. But I have to say we have as talented a group of employees in this company as anywhere I've worked or any company I've worked with. And I think the brand has something to do with that.
I can tell that you're very careful about who you get involved with. As you know, we've been going through presenting our education material and so forth. And so it's been quite a process. So you really don't get involved with anybody as a company that you don't check out very carefully. So that's been impressive.
You know, one of the things that Jim was bright enough to do early on is instead of trickling into the market with search engine marketing tools and things like that, he went right after partnerships with companies like Yahoo in their real estate area and MSN in their real estate area.
Mm-hmm.
And it did a couple things. One is it drove, you know, a fair amount of traffic right off the bat for the company. But the other is it associated us with well-known, well-respected brands. And I can't tell you how many customers I've talked to said, well, I figured if Yahoo chose you guys, you must be the best in your category. and we're trying to develop our brand to the point where it adds value to our partners as well. And because of that, we have to be very careful about who we partner with, about how we're perceived, about what we do in the marketplace. And honestly, Bruce, it is one of the probably most zealously guarded assets that we have here at the company is that brand. And I will tell you that the material benefit for us is more people than at any point in our history are now coming to RealtyTrack online by starting the search with RealtyTrack in the first place. So they're not finding us accidentally while they're searching for foreclosures. About half of our traffic now is starting with somebody saying, I want to go to RealtyTrack right away.
That's quite an accomplishment.
It's been a lot of work.
You said that you have 2,500 counties. I mean, it's just overwhelming. Is the way the foreclosure data is retrieved the same in every county, or do they do it different ways? And how do you end up with this all making sense in a timely manner? That's a lot of questions. I'm sorry.
Well, as you know, Bruce, all 50 states and the District of Columbia have different foreclosure laws. They're all relatively similar, but none of them are alike. We the 2,500 counties that we cover don't all report foreclosure activity every month, but they cover about 95% of the households in the country. What we get is anything from electronic feeds from the more advanced areas to, and this is actually a huge portion of our data, we actually have people going into the county records offices and manually scribing or copying or getting copies of the information, then uploading it into the database. And as you can imagine, when you're doing that over, you know, that many counties, it is a time-consuming and pretty complicated program. But to give you an idea of the ridiculous nature of things, in the state of Texas, they still photocopy the records and thumbtack them onto a corkboard in the county recorder's office.
That's not the only source, I hope.
That is the only source for the county data in those states. So what we've done in Texas is we have an arrangement with them where they make us our own copy.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's the level of manual labor involved in this. And then what we do is, because you can get, I mean, people can walk into the county recorder's office in most counties, not all, but in most, and find and get their own copies of the filings. What we'll do then is run them against other national databases, and we will add things like property characteristics, loan history, comparable sales, tax lien information, bankruptcy filings, photos if we can find them, owner's contact information, so that all of this then gets presented in a normalized, consistent user interface that our subscribers can basically view from coast to coast.
Yeah, I'm a subscriber, and it was a no-brainer. It's an unbelievable service, and the cost is I don't understand the cost, actually, because any local data provider in California is a lot more for just a particular county than you are for the country.
It's a question of scale. And, you know, if McDonald's only had one restaurant, they probably wouldn't sell their hamburgers as cheaply as they do.
I guess that's true.
But we get 3 million people visiting us a month, and a certain percentage of them stay on as subscribers. And so I had a customer tell me once that we were absolutely positively the second best source of data he could find, and I laughed for a while. And I said, well, you know, who is the best? And he said, well, there was this little outfit in Orange County, Florida. He said, I think somebody actually lives and sleeps at the courthouse, and they might have the data a day before you do sometimes, and maybe they have a filing or two that you don't get, and they charge me $150 a month for that one county.
Correct.
So, you know, he said, for a third of that price to get the whole country plus all the other information they don't have, this was kind of a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer, and you know what? Most trusty sale buyers actually do subscribe to more than one data source for the very reason that you're mentioning. This is Bruce Norris, and you're listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show.
There are two kinds of people in California, people who've invested in real estate and people who wish they had. Stop wishing and become a real estate investor, or sharpen those skills and learn how to switch strategies during the current market transition at the Norris Group's California Only Investor Essentials Seminar. It's an all-day seminar, Saturday, March 17th, where both beginners and professionals can learn valuable information. Bruce Norris will teach you the essentials to become a successful California real estate investor. You'll learn how to quickly estimate repairs, properly question owners, deal with contractors, hold title correctly, and use hard money to fund deals. And that's just the beginning. This full day of essential training is only $97, an incredible value considering this California-specific training will empower you to create the income you always dreamed of. Become the California real estate investor you've always admired at the California Only Investor Essentials Seminar, March 17th. Go to thenorrisgroup.com and sign up today, because space is limited. Thenorrisgroup.com. Thenorrisgroup.com.
We're back. This is Bruce Norris, and you're listening to the Norris Group Radio Show. Today's my privilege to interview Rick Sharga, who's the Vice President of Realty Track. Realty Track is the largest provider of foreclosure data in the country. Rick, most trusty sale buyers actually do subscribe to more than one data source for the very reason that you're mentioning. I know sometimes you've been interviewed and you'll talk about different states' numbers, mm-hmm. and your numbers will disagree with maybe someone else's. Mm-hmm. And it's because, I guess, you guys just have different data points or data sources.
It's data. Well, generally, we pull everything out of public records. So in some cases, people are getting information from lenders or attorneys. But the other overarching aspect of this is, you know, if my numbers are 1% or 2% different from a local vendor's, it's the trends we're really looking at.
Correct.
And you know, it's also, as you know well from being an investor, the foreclosure market is a numbers game. If there are 1,000 properties in your region, there's probably only 100 that are properties you'd be interested in because of your particular investing profile.
Correct.
And then the question becomes, how many of those can you actually get in touch with? How many people can you make an offer to? And the numbers go down from there. So I figure by offering the biggest footprint of available properties, we give more people the opportunity to find more or less what they're looking for.
Yes, all that additional information is vital for time saving.
And that's probably the biggest advantage I hear back in the marketplace. It's online. It's updated twice a day. It's the 80-20 rule. We're going to get you 80% of the information almost instantly, and allow you to make pretty quick decisions about whether it's worth pursuing a property. It's a full-time job otherwise.
There, just so you know, there's no local source that's ever 100% accurate either. If you get the list, you have to realize that. No list is 100% accurate, because they're trying to deal with so many records so fast that there's just going to be mistakes. So you have to check out all the information yourself.
Well, I mean, even the tapes that the counties use for their own records typically have errors in them.
Sure, and that's probably, you're probably just printing something exactly what they said, and it wasn't correct.
So we're going to be as accurate as those records are.
Okay.
99% of the time, we'll occasionally have some data entry errors ourselves. But one of the benefits of running against some of these other national databases is we will occasionally find those problems and be able to fix them, whereas maybe some of the local guys wouldn't.
There's a term, couple terms. Let's just talk about what they mean. Pre-foreclosure, that's used quite a bit. What does that mean? What stage of the cycle does that represent?
Well, as you know, the process really has three primary stages in most states. There's an initial notice of default. In California, I believe that's 113 days, if I'm not mistaken, 117 days. And that's a period where the lender is past being delinquent. It's usually after 60 or 90 days of consecutive missed payments. And that's a pre-foreclosure stage because the homeowner is now officially in default, but the auction has not yet occurred.
Okay, so it's kind of pre-auction then. Okay.
It is pre-auction, and we also include notice of trustee sales, which is the second phase in California, and I believe a minimum 21-day cycle.
Correct.
In that pre-foreclosure category, although we separate them as auction properties on the site because they're scheduled. But anything prior to the auction technically is, while it's technically a foreclosure property, in our lexicon, it's pre-foreclosure.
Okay. When we hear numbers in the news media saying foreclosures are up a certain percentage, in California there's two stages like you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about foreclosures increasing, are they usually referring to one stage or the other? Good question.
it's a very good question. We have done the word foreclosure a terrible disservice because it's a noun, it's a verb, it's an adjective, it's a predicate nominative. It's probably a gerundial phrase if you want to look that up. the press is hard to gauge. When we talk about foreclosures, we talk about foreclosure activity, and that constitutes some public record filing of either the pre-foreclosure or the auction or the REO, which is the stage where the bank repossesses the property.
Okay.
So our data and our reports will include all three areas of foreclosure activity. The press has historically focused on the bank repossessions as being the foreclosures, but we think that's a little bit by like determining what an elephant looks like by holding onto its tail.
Okay.
Of the properties that enter our database as pre-foreclosure properties or default properties, about 60% of them don't make it to the auction. Of those that do get to the auction, about half go back to the bank and the other half are purchased by third-party investors or buyers, which means that of the whole marketplace, about 20% historically have been REOs.
Okay.
And we just don't think that's a terribly accurate way to portray the activity level in the industry.
We had talked privately about that number being very different during good and bad times. So let's just touch on that for a second and then maybe translate that to opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
When California goes through its cycles, we have about 1,000% increase in trustee sales from valley to peak. And during that time, you have a notice of default, let's say in 1989, which was a peak price year, or 2005, and only 13% ever get to the courthouse steps.
Right.
Then you go to a 1997, and about 56% end up there. And at that point, you also were at the low point of interest in real estate. So 97, everybody really doesn't think real estate's so hot. And so a lot of those end up being bank repos.
Mm-hmm.
In the states where you have a lot of properties going back to the bank, is that also coinciding with the largest discounts that lenders are having to give up to get rid of the properties?
Right now it is, yes. If you look at states like Michigan that have been very hard hit by foreclosures, our January numbers saw that about 40% of the new filings were REO properties. And to put that in perspective, in California, we were probably in the low teens.
Right.
And again, based on our numbers, California, the foreclosure properties at all three levels on average are selling for 85 to 87% of market value,
mm-hmm.
whereas in Michigan, they're selling for, you know, about 65%. So there's definitely a correlation. And where we are in California is interesting because we saw 131% increase year over year in total foreclosure activity from 05 to 06.
Okay.
And a 54% increase January to January looking at 07's numbers.
Okay.
But we're not seeing either the notice of trustee sales or the bank repossessions go up appreciably yet. So it appears we're still at the early part of the cycle.
Okay, if that's true, now we've heard a lot of talk about a soft landing. So if we're at the early part of the cycle, that means there's going to be a harder landing than we've experienced. Is that accurate?
I'd like to let that one go for the economic geniuses. I think it's going to be region by region, to be honest.
Of course. No, I'm talking specifically California now.
Yeah.
If we're going to have more trustee sales, does that equate to probably more price softness?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's fair enough. And I think that's sort of I think that's a foregone conclusion. But a lot of people don't see it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned, and this is gets to the consumer part of it, where people in foreclosure seem to have a real tough time talking to somebody that could maybe come to a better conclusion than let's just take your property.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Oh, absolutely.
We talk, you know, they talk about that they want to mitigate the damage and get the cooperative, but not too often can you reach somebody that can make that happen?
There's a couple fundamental problems. The first is that when somebody gets into this stage, they tend to be very emotionally distressed. And keep in mind that they don't wind up in foreclosure accidentally. There's usually something bad that's happened to them to get them into foreclosure in the first place. So they're already in emotional distress. So that's point one. They tend to be in denial or even in hiding. The other part is that the person they should contact first, who is the lender, has not up until now been terribly easy to get a hold of. The only people that contact the homeowner tend to be the collections department.
Correct.
And those people are incented or compensated based on how much they can collect on a bad debt. So if the lender would make it easier for the homeowner to get in touch with somebody in their loss mitigation area to develop some sort of workout program, that would be a big help. What we're seeing right now is the void hopefully starting to be filled by nonprofit organizations and government-sponsored organizations in states like Colorado, whose job is to work with the homeowner and then with the lender to try and sort of act as an intermediary to work out a more satisfactory solution.
What's kind of interesting when you go through the food chain of how the loans are created and who they're sold to, a lot of times the originator certainly isn't the holder of the paper.
True.
And so it's really hard to figure out who you're supposed to talk to.
Gets even worse because you have the holder of the paper, and very often the holder will assign the property to a loan servicer,
mm-hmm.
Who may or may not be motivated to do anything terribly extraordinary in terms of outreach. So it's a very complicated food chain.
And you only have a time frame. That time frame varies state to state. I guess Texas is probably the quickest one. And then it goes out to New York.
Texas is 21 days start to finish. Don't mess with Texas. And and New York, being a judicial state, and it does have the longest process. It's 455 days on average from notice to auction.
In a down market, that could be pretty painful for New York lenders, that's for sure.
Yes.
With only a couple minutes left, who are your typical clients? There's multiple people that use your sources. Who are they? What are they made up of, investors and so forth?
You know, about 65% of our subscribers categorize themselves either as professional real estate investors or people who are looking to become professional real estate investors.
Okay.
Another 20% are first-time homebuyers who are looking to get a bargain on a property that they can afford to get into the market. Another 10% are probably people that are not investors per se, but they're looking to see if they can buy a vacation home or a second home or one property, but they're really not looking to do this on a full-time basis. And then the balance are professionals that are somehow related to real estate, whether they're agents or lenders or appraisers or people along those lines.
Usually in a downturn, mm-hmm. the award auction really starts coming into play. Builder auctions start happening, and they already are happening in Florida. Is that something that you have any interest in, or there'll be some auctions put on your website?
Yeah, in fact, we're currently doing online auctions on the site through a partner company. So our subscribers have access to bank repossessed homes that are available on an eBay-style auction right on the site.
Okay.
And that service is free for our members. We're actually talking with a number of national real estate auction firms right now.
Mm-hmm.
Our members tend to be people who want to transact. They want to be able to buy. And we're going to start seeing the auction business increase significantly, both in the post-foreclosure properties, the REOs, but I think in the future we're going to see even pre-foreclosure properties where people who can't wait for the normal real estate process to work its way through will look at online auctions as a different way to try and move the property within a given time frame.
I think you're right. Well, Rick, we've run out of time. It's been fascinating getting to speak with you, and I enjoy Realty Track Service myself. Thanks for joining us for these past 2 weeks and really helping us understand what's going on in the loan industry and your foreclosure services. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Bruce. Anytime.
Okay, Rick. Thanks.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.